from KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. On air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Now we're going to move on to the show today. Emphasis on education in the STEM fields has increased significantly in recent years. President Obama has said that future leadership in the U.S. depends on it. Here in Columbia and at schools across the country, science education is an ever-changing field with research and discovery constantly changing what's taught. Today on Intersection, we're talking with educators in Columbia tasked with leading the science instruction in public schools. Joining us in studio today for the conversation, Dr. Peter Stiepelman is the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Dr. Stiepelman, welcome to Intersection.
Thanks so much.
Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And April Soulsey is a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. April, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And for you and our audience, do you have any questions about science education in Columbia Public Schools? Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So to get started today, just a very basic question. We're going to talk a lot about working with young kids and high school age kids in science. But let's start with a question of why. Why is this a really important topic for students to be taking on? Mike, maybe it's good to start with you on that.
Sure. We feel it's very important because we're not trying to produce a lot of little scientists running around. We know that maybe a small percentage of students will become scientists. However, everybody will use science. And so we want them to be able to critically evaluate what they see on TV, in the newspapers, what they hear out when they vote. So we want them to be well-informed citizens, and we're really trying to produce problem solvers in the community.
Right, right. And so, yeah, how do you make those adjustments too as, you know, the science changes and there are, you know, current events that are mm-hmm. happening and different topics that come up? Is it something you just have to kind of make those adjustments to year by year?
We do. And that's one of the reasons we do not use traditional textbooks anymore, because we want to stay as up-to-date as possible. But as important as the content is, we cannot predict where the students are actually going to be employed. And so by sticking with things like communication and problem solving, interest in science, it's a very broad spectrum approach to where we're hoping that they're successful in any avenue that they take.
So if you're not using textbooks, what are you using?
We're using iPads in laptop computers. So it's laptop computers and iPads in the high schools. And we're just starting this year. We have one iPad for every two science students in middle school. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to introduce iPads in the elementary. So they're on there. Some of them are using their phones even, so they can get those out. So it's amazing now when you ask them to look up information, even when they have a book, they can find it quicker on the phone.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I was wondering, April, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about, so if we're not using textbooks or those types of things, how do we make sure that we are introducing things like media literacy, or that students know that as critical thinkers, when they're looking at information on the web, that it's accurate?
Right, what's
so
a
that
good
they don't
source,
have to only ask you, how do they learn those skills? And I became the interviewer, sorry.
Yeah,
but
no,
I was
that's
curious
fine.
As a,
no, that's a great
so
question. Yeah.
That was one of our questions that we asked at the beginning of this year, especially since we're moving towards more research-based projects that the kids are working on. And just teaching them. And so that really is our new kind of responsibility, is teaching kids how to find reputable sources and teaching them how to make annotated bibliographies so we can actually see and get a little glimpse of what they're doing. And they're actually rating it on a relevancy scale we've created. But they're mm-hmm. rating how relevant how this is, how accurate is this information? Does it align with other types of information? And then just teaching them in general the difference between .org and .com and kind of how to do internet searches. And then we've got great online sources through our media center and making the kids just aware that that's accessible to them and it's free. And we've got amazing, great sources. And so we bring media center specialists in, and we are now... Last year it was sort of an afterthought because we were just beginning kind of some of this communication and this online research. And so we are now bringing media specialists in to just teach kids how to.
Well, and again, these skills, as you're talking about, Mike, go well beyond your scientist in a lab, right? These are things that are going to apply to pretty much
Absolutely.
Any professional.
So, Ryan, what I think you're going to start hearing through over this hour is that we're moving – a bit away from just learning content just for content's sake, and more about how do kids critically think. And one way to perhaps talk about that a little bit over this time together is about the next generation science standards. We have a whole new set of standards that the Columbia Public Schools adopted, that Mike and his team of amazing teachers led. And I don't know, is it appropriate to...
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay? That was one of the things that was on our list. Okay. And I wasn't sure. Now, Missouri hasn't necessarily signed on that as a state, but Columbia has.
Columbia,
right?
Columbia embraces the fact that we're going to... look at standards. That we embrace the fact that as a local community, we have control over curriculum. However, when it comes to social studies, when it comes to science, and when it comes to just Common Core in terms of the other core subject areas, we believe strongly that we want critical thinkers. We want kids who can explain things and not just memorize facts.
So what are the next generation science standards?
Sure. And Peter, it was an excellent introduction there. Our old science standards were an accumulation of many, many facts. April's team in biology is an excellent example. But if you actually look at what April was asked to teach a couple of years ago, if you break down the number of topics, she has about 176 days of school, and there's 181 discrete topics in biology. So unless she were to master every one, one topic a day and master that, and there was no field trip and there was no review day, it just can't be done. And so they have to decide what they were going to skip. The Next Generation Science Standards was a group of 200 scientists and educators and college professors that got together and thought, what does every student need in science? Similar to what Common Core did for math and language arts. And they cut it down significantly. And instead of 181 different topics, there's still a bunch, but it's about two-thirds of what it used to be, but they're far deeper. And so the point of these standards are teachers like April can teach less discrete different topics, but they can go deeper and do the projects that she was talking about a few minutes ago. So it's much less content, but now we have to focus on problem solving, data analysis, communicating those, because you can, as you see, sometimes people know a lot of science, but if you can't communicate it, it doesn't help anybody. So how do we communicate this out there? And we look at other assessments that are very important to kids, like the ACT test. On the ACT science test, all the answers are on those pages. But it's still hard because it's very difficult to make inferences and interpret that data. Hopefully that's giving the teachers more time to do that.
And so is part of this, I think I heard you saying this, but is part of that also getting some more hands-on experience than you usually would in your traditional classrooms?
Yeah. Because if she's doing one topic a day, which I know she didn't do because that wouldn't be very effective, but if she was, there's no room for labs. Right. It's just a lot of worksheets and memorization, and data shows you memorize something and 7 days later it's gone unless you can honestly use it.
Right, and right. Last year was the first year that we actually implemented the NGSS, and I didn't hear from kids anymore, why do I have to learn this? Why are you making me memorize this? I don't care that they know the equation for photosynthesis or cellular respiration, but do I care that they understand the bigger implications of putting all this carbon into the atmosphere and so that type of stuff? So the switch has been really great for us and for our kids, because I don't have to fight that battle of this is really important, but I have to teach this to you so we can get to the really important stuff. Now we're just getting to the important stuff, and it makes so much more sense to kids, and we're happier with it because none of us really liked it. We liked that stuff, but it was hard for us to actually get the kids to understand it.
And that's probably that is the excuse when you're in high school as a student, right? Or probably a challenge in science and math fields as well, that, when is this ever going to help me in my real life? And so you're saying this approach really seems to have changed that a little bit, at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Thanks to the guests that are joining us here today. Dr. Peter Stiepelman, the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools. And April Soolsey is a biology teacher at Rockridge High School. Today, we're talking about science education in Columbia Public Schools. For you and our audience, if you have any questions about science education in Columbia, give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. What are some of the other challenges, too, though, I guess, to getting to these students when they're, I guess, you're at the high school level, but even younger as well, trying to get kids actually interested in science instead of, more interested in language arts or something
right.
like that.
It starts in elementary school. Yeah. There's research that we've seen that if a student is not hooked on science by fourth grade, they will very likely not be hooked on science. And actually, there's even further research that they'll be behind and they won't score as high on the ACT. And I personally believe that's because in elementary science is supposed to be about fun and discovery. And I'm not so much worried about the exact factual content in elementary school because I just want them hooked. If they don't get hooked in elementary and their first science experiences in middle school, it starts just getting hard. And if to jump right into something that's hard without loving it, they're not going to be as successful. So we really are trying to find ways to integrate science into all subject areas, kindergarten on through. Students naturally love science. Mm-hmm. We just got to make sure that we keep that up.
And Ryan, one of the things we're doing is we're putting science into our writing curriculum. So if you're in a second grade class, the second genre of writing is all about informational text and informational writing. And the second graders, they do a whole unit on force, right, which is traditional as part of the content, but they are generating hypotheses and they have to write about it and they have to talk about the tests that they're making. And they are, you know, you said you don't want little scientists walking around. I'm like, I do want little scientists walking around. But, it's pretty exciting. As a district, we can go all the way from high school and look at how our students outperform students around the state and know that we're doing something right. We go to eighth grade and we see that our students, more than 60% of them are proficient or advanced on MAP on the science section as compared to the rest of the state, which is a little over 50%. We back it up to fifth grade and our students are somewhat equal to the state, a little bit higher in some years and then the same in other years. So what the challenge is for Mike as a K through 12 science coordinator is to look for innovative ways that we can introduce science to elementary age kids, whether that's Benton STEM, which is our science, technology, engineering, math school, which was a school that had declining enrollment, low test scores, and in this past year earned 3 out of the 4 points that are eligible in terms of science, which is really exciting for a school that had traditionally just gotten zero.
Huge improvement.
So huge improvement. Mike also coordinates with Vicki Russell and Andy Waters of the Columbia Tribune and does – can you talk about the Tribune?
It's okay. We'll
all right.
Allow it.
All right,
sure.
Sorry. So, but what's really exciting is that they approached us with this idea of wanting to communicate science more to our general public as well as our elementary age kids. So Mike every week puts out in the – is it the Wednesday paper? Something about science that is – timely, relevant, and connected to what students are learning. And then we've got these other innovations in place, something we're working on, the Nature School, where fifth graders would spend 100 fifth graders would spend the entire year in Rockbridge State Park in a science classroom. Mm-hmm. So we are looking for ways to not just rest on our laurels, but continue to improve access to science so that kids will be eligible to take these AP courses.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about that Nature School, though.
Sure,
let me talk a little more about that idea. Like, how realistic is it that may happen, and how far away may it be before we see that happen?
Well, you know, all things were moving along at a great pace. In fact, we have a design that is ready. The last day of the General Assembly, there were a number of tax cuts. And you know what? My job is not to be political; it's to really.
Sure. But it's a practical.
But I can tell you
right?
that when I ask the budget office from the state, which is a nonpartisan group, you know, what are the possible implications? Well, they say it's $6 million for the county, it's $5 million for the city, and it's $2 million for the schools, and then. As part of those cuts, included state parks, and our nature school is a part of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we hear from our state partners is that this will happen, and so our hope is still that we'll break ground sometime this fall and be ready for next August. That was the plan, and so we're holding on to hope there until the September veto session passes, and we'll see what happens there. So you can have me back on, and I'll go,
sure, yeah,
or
yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, exactly. We'll do that one way or the other, commiserate or cheer.
That's right.
What would a day look like at the Nature School for a student there? And I guess also the body of work there. I mean, would it be mostly science, or would you still try to get all the other –
That's a really good question. I'm going to let you answer, Mike.
Yeah.
And I think what I hope that you'll talk about is the Teton trip that you do. I think
Absolutely.
It's a natural way
sure.
to kind of
sure.
talk about that.
But you asked, would it just be mostly science? It would still be every standard that every fifth grade student is supposed to learn around the state and in our district. However, we want to do it in a more integrated approach as opposed to the siloing that we sometimes do. So we want to find every connection to – I mean, the connections to language, arts, and literacy to any subject is immense, and we need to take more advantage of that. Mm-hmm. So while the base of it will be scientific studies and they'll be out in the field and on trails, they'll be coming back and doing the language arts related to that. They'll be doing the math related to that. There's a lot of history there. It's just that the project-based part of it will be a science theme. Mm-hmm. But they're still going to – our goal is and we pretty much we expect it, is not only were there, well, are their science scores going to be higher regardless of the demographics, but so will their math, their language arts, and their social studies scores, because we're looking for the kid that might not be as interested in the traditional way of thinking, but they're very interested in science, and they're going to accidentally get the other parts that they don't realize they're interested in. So, and we get this is what Dr. Steepman was talking about. Every summer, we're very proud. We took 300 kids to Grand Teton and Yellowstone National Parks this year, and every state sends people there, but we somehow become number one in the country on that trip, and it just shows the amount of science that, that people appreciate in this community, and I think a lot of that's having a university, a town. But we take them up there, and it is a science field trip, but they learn leadership, they learn communication skills, they learn history. And April is one of our chaperones the last couple of years, and she can chime in. But those students are learning all day long, but they don't realize it because they're having a blast. And then they sign up to pay for it again the next year. And it's a break-even trip for Columbia. We try not to make money nor lose. Our first year, 3 years ago, we had 77 kids, and it's grown to 300. And we're holding our breath for registration in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, April, what have your experiences been like with the students there?
Yeah, no, I mean, they're great. And you always are worried about taking so many kids that far away from home, mm-hmm. And being kind of out in the woods of my first year.
How old are they?
So we had some high schoolers, but predominantly middle school kids. But you have no behavior or relatively little behavior issues, and the kids they're excited to learn, they're excited to be there. They get up every morning and they're ready to go out into the field. And so I have nothing but great things to say about it, and I mean, I'll continue to go as long as I can. So.
One other question I think some parents might have about the nature school is, how will we determine what students would be allowed
to
attend that?
Yeah, so it'll be in a lottery. One of the things Mike and I have talked about in terms of everything from enrollment guidelines and teacher selection, we have some ideas, but until we break ground, it doesn't make sense to raise any of those things. But I can tell you that we want it to be a part of Benton STEM, and so if you're a fifth grader at Benton STEM, you're entitled to go. The class there is very small, so you still have probably about 75 open spots for community kids. And I'm glad you brought it back to that, because one of the things that we talk about, at least the three pillars for me in the Columbia Public Schools, are achievement, enrichment, and opportunity. And overarching all of those is just the word access. So how do we make sure that kids have access to great teachers, to great curriculum? How do we make sure that's achievement? Enrichment is just how do we make sure that kids have access to programs, initiatives, activities that really round out the entire curriculum, and then opportunities. How do we make sure that kids have access to things like the Teton trip? So that's really something that I need to think about, is to make sure that a kid who may not be able to afford it, you know, and I know Mike works hard to try to figure out ways to get scholarships and things like that, but how do we make sure that it's not episodic but more part of a system, that any kid should be able to go as long as they're interested? One of the reasons – so the state of Missouri, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed, has this goal of being the top 10 – Missouri being one of the top 10 schools or states by 2020. Mm-hmm. And so if you hit a certain score, they call it 2020 target, meaning that you have met what they're hoping you will have by 2020. And so the Columbia Public Schools in science continues to make that. And I think a part of that was Dr. Belcher's vision, although I was against it when he came to visit me when I was a principal, to say, thinking about eliminating science specialists at the elementary school, what do you think? I said, horrible idea. And he said, well, thanks for your feedback, which he did not follow. So what ended up happening was that we were asking fourth and fifth grade teachers, and all teachers up to them, but certainly the fourth and fifth grade teachers, to pick up science instruction, and our scores skyrocketed. Now, a big part of that, I think, also that we contributed to teacher success was something, and Candy Galen is a professor here at MU. She came up with this idea of through National Science Foundation funding, was called GK-12, which was to put graduate students in the sciences and pair them up with general ed teachers to help them teach science. For the graduate students, it was for them to learn how to communicate science ideas and their own research. And for our teachers, it was to get some of the content knowledge that perhaps they did not have, and some help in terms of preparing the things. And so we did that for, 4 years? Mm-hmm. And it's been, I think, a great success. You can't disagree with me on the air.
No, I can't.
I was going to say. You put both of you in a interesting perspective where your boss is here asking all kinds of questions.
Yes. What else do we say? That's right. Well, I got you on the air. This is what else I'd like you to tell me that you agree with. Yeah. But the truth is that it was pretty phenomenal. And so as Mike and I are thinking about which teachers would participate in our nature school, I mean, that's a really good well to go to, because here are some teachers who have regularly participated in GK12, regularly attended the Tetons trip, and have a pretty good idea of what place-based education might look like.
Right. So. We need to take a moment to remind our audience this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about science education in Columbia Public Schools. Joining us in studio today for the conversation, Dr. Peter Stiepelman is the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools. And April Soulsy is a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. And for you in our audience, do you have any questions about science education in Columbia Public Schools? Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. And so, yeah, that was a great example of Columbia Public Schools working with the University of Missouri on some projects. You mentioned earlier, Mike, that you thought Columbia seemed to support sciences pretty well. What else? What other examples are there of that? Do you feel like Columbia is a good science community?
Absolutely. You know, I use that Teton trip as an example. Other school districts all over the state and all over the country have been doing the Teton trip for a while and just haven't come close to our numbers. Another one we have every spring, we collaborate with Mizzou, and we have what we call a science expo or science sleuth. And we were kind of blown away last year when 2,800 people showed up to the Mizzou campus on a Saturday. And it was almost too much. And so we're reacting. Now we know that, this is something that people want. And they brought their whole families out. You could barely move, as you saw. So we're spreading that out. We're going to have a STEM expo in the fall on November 8th at Rockbridge High School. And we're going to do another, and that's geared for 3rd through 8th grade. And then we're going to have an elementary K-5 traditional science expo in the spring just to try to dilute the crowds a little bit so they can actually do more science. But everything we do in science seems to get a very good following. Even our Facebook pages have over 1,000 followers that interact with us. And it's just we're living in a great town for science.
Mike, I wonder if you would also talk about, you know, as I was thinking about achievement, enrichment, and opportunity, and the fact that not everyone gets to go on the Teton trip, but everyone has the opportunity to participate in the science camps.
Right.
And I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking
Absolutely.
A little bit about that.
We started about, April, help me, 3 years ago, maybe? It might be four now.
Four years ago,
we started a camp program. And we've been to different places. We sometimes at Mark Twain State Park, sometimes at Lake of the Ozarks. This year we're trying out some rural land closer to home. But every middle school student during one grade of their middle school career gets to spend 2 days out of camp. They can make donations, but it's free. Everybody gets to go. And we really stress, even if you don't think you're a camper, we want you to go. We've had quotes out there. One particular one I'll never forget was a couple girls hiking, and it was a cloudy day, and so they get to the edge of the woods, and they stopped, and they said, well, the forests are scary, and they've never been in a forest, and we found out they've never been to a state park, and it's just opening opportunities that maybe they're interested in. So when they get to camp, they're going to do your traditional camp programs, the campfires, the outdoor cooking, the fishing, but we also bring scientists in and talk about careers, and so we're trying to get those kids interested, and it probably fuels our Grand Teton trip, but one of the things we want is we just want them to go home and take their family on a hike. Columbia is another great one for trails or Rockbridge State Park. Sure. Everything we do on that camp that can be done here, but just many of them with everybody's busy family lives, it doesn't happen as much. So part of giving everybody access and opportunities is we're going to do that for them. And let the other, and it's not just, I can't just praise science teachers on that, although they're wonderful. This takes a whole team. So the math teacher goes, the social studies teacher goes, language arts, and sometimes they're journaling. And without those other subject areas in this great collaboration, it wouldn't be possible. So it's just, I think, last year we took 2,000 kids camping on those programs.
Is that common for public schools to be able to offer something like
that? No, we found out we're the biggest. There are some camps. St. Louis does some camp programs, but it's much smaller. To my knowledge, in Missouri, we're the only district that sends every middle schooler on a camp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I figured it might not be that common. Right. Well, we actually have a caller on the line who I thought we would bring in, Joe from Columbia. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thanks for calling in today.
Hi, my question for the panel is, since Missouri is such a conservative state, I wonder if there are any local groups or local people like creationists or conservatives or church people or whoever that are causing problems for science education here in Colombia? Like, is there any, are we having to fight with that? Are we dealing with any problems here? Or is Colombia a more accepting area than Missouri as a whole? I just want to know what our local fight against that type of thing was like.
Sure. Joe, great. Thanks. Great question. Appreciate that.
I can.
Everybody's ready to jump in.
That's right.
Yeah. April, you talk first. I'll let you go.
In the 9 years that I've been teaching, I've had, I think, three parents who have come to me, typically back to school night. They pull me aside and they want to talk to me about how I'm planning on teaching evolution. And so I have my spiel that I give them, and I tell them that in no ways am I going against their religious beliefs. I'm just giving the scientific viewpoint, and that, you know, we don't believe in science. Science is what it is, and that that I try to do a very good job of not stepping on and going against their beliefs. And and usually parents are okay with that, and I've never ever had issues beyond that. But I think they just want to know that we're not going to say, you know, in a science classroom, we're not going to get into religion issues.
Mike. And I can add, if they do not get the answer they want from the teachers, it usually comes to my office.
I think that's why we all jump in. And they don't like what he's going to say. Right,
exactly. Right. We'll work up a ladder.
Right, yes. I will say, though, that I have been a science coordinator in another part of the state, and I dealt with the evolution issue much more than I do in Colombia. And so I believe it was Joe, the caller. And Joe, what I can say is I do believe Colombia is more progressive in the evolution. The next generation science standards have evolution or parts of natural selection going from fourth grade on up. And that is what's causing some parts of the state to be worried about the NGSS standards. But in Colombia, they've been embraced. I also think when I talk to a parent, knock on wood, every discussion has been successful so far, because we sit down and we really tell them what it is we're teaching in evolution. And I think it's a misconception. I think they often think we're teaching about how life started, which is not evolution at all. It's about how life changes based on environmental pressures. And so when I show them the curriculum and I show them the standards and what we're doing, it's usually kind of a relief on their end. And I remember it was a year or two ago, I think at your school, we had a situation where they wanted to excuse their student or their child from those classes where evolution was taught. By the end of the discussion, when they realized what it is, and we're really not talking about humans all that often, they actually sent them, and it's been fine. So, again, knock on wood, so far in my time in my 5 years in Columbia, we've had nobody that left the conversation very upset.
Yeah. Peter, we only have about 30 seconds before the break, so okay.
So, no, I would just agree with both what April and Mike have said, and that's that what parents are mostly concerned about is whether or not we're going to try to interpret their religious beliefs or in some way put down what they believe as a family. So when we are very open, we say, look, we recognize we're the public schools. That's not our job is not to interpret. They usually are pretty good with that. And I think in the 10 seconds I probably have left is that, when we talk about conservation, words like heritage and values, those cross-party lines, that everyone wants that. So it has not been an issue for us.
All right. We'll have to take that quick break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about science education in Columbia Public Schools. Joining us in studio, Dr. Peter Stiepelman is the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools. And April Soulsey is a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. I'm Ryan Femuelner. We'll be right back after the short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famioner, and today we're talking about science education in Columbia Public Schools. Joining us in studio today for the conversation, Dr. Peter Stiebelman is the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools. And April Soulsey is a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. And for you and our audience, what has your child's experience been like learning science in Columbia schools? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection at KBIA. KBIA.org. You could also tweet us at IntersectKBIA, or you could join our online chat. So we talked a little bit earlier about working with students at the grade school level. It's when you have to get them interested. But April, I wondered a little bit more about the high school level and some of the challenges you deal with there too, but also just the kind of techniques you can use to help get students interested and really embrace science.
Yeah, and so I started doing field trips as well, just to kids kind of interested in. And I think across the board, we're all dealing with the same challenges, is that kids come in with these kind of preconceived ideas that science is hard and, only really smart kids do science and that kind of stuff. And so to really make the material that they're learning not only relevant and practical and useful, but also understandable. Because, sometimes I'm reading science articles and I don't even know what the heck it's saying either. So changing our curriculum to where they can see that relevancy, I think, is a big deal. But then also kind of catering to what the kids want to do. And so the kids, for example, when I first started field trips, the kids would come into my class, and it was when like Survivor Man was really popular on television, and they wanted to know, are we going to learn how we can survive in the wilderness? Well, I guess we can.
I wasn't planning on it.
But so I worked with Glenn Pickett through the Hawthorne Plant Society, and we started doing just a day field trip out to Rockbridge State Park, but we would, for about 6 to 8 weeks prior to that, take class time to learn about Missouri native plants, so edible poisonous medicinal plants. And we would go out there, and they would make field guides, and they would actually collect stuff, and I would actually make something out of persimmons, things that I knew were not deadly, because they bring me this mushroom. This looks like a good eating edible mushroom. No, that is called destroying angel. You want to put that back. And so we started doing that, and kids got really excited into it, and I was teaching photosynthesis and cellular respiration through all of that while they're learning about the plants. And so that was my way to kind of hook them and get them excited about these topics that they don't really care much about in order to do this field trip. And then we did service projects while we were out there, and they learned about invasive species. And so I did that, but I also kind of get bored with project. So I did that for about 3 years, and I thought, we've got to do something bigger and a little bit better. So I started taking my honors biology sophomore kids to Lake of the Ozarks State Park as well, and doing a 3-day field camp where we did a lot of the same things as the middle school kids, but we just brought in some other types of scientists that could talk about different things that were relevant to our classroom.
So. In addition to that, I do want to say that even our middle school camps, we have high school students that are our guides for those camps. So in April, for Rockbridge organizes that. So not only do we have learning the science, but we have these guides that they're learning communication skills. They're running a lot of the programs. So our high school is involved even in the middle school camp.
So I wonder, Mike and Peter, when we hear like cool opportunities like April's talking about here that weren't necessarily part of your curriculum when you started the semester. You mentioned the top 10 by 20, and all that. They're always worried about test scores and things like that. How do you balance ideas like this that students are interested in with, making sure you're getting those test scores?
But I think those test scores, the point I was trying to make is that, through all these types of innovative, whether it's project-based learning through, learning your standards through that, then you don't need to worry about studying for, these state tests. That comes as a natural product of the work that they're doing together. And so my question, as April was talking, was I was going to ask Mike off air, but I'll ask you on air. And so I'm just kind of curious about the collaborative teams that I know you've worked really hard on building, because when I talked to a middle school science teacher yesterday, I saw her out and about, and she said all the sixth grade science teachers are getting together to plan for the year. And I thought, how marvelous that they're doing that. And so I know that's a product of something that you really value. How do we make sure that, that the Hickman biology team and that
the you know and that and battle that they're working together so right. that it's not the you know you're lucky enough to have been in April's class that this is a product of what we value as a school district.
I could not agree more, and I really I'm glad you brought up the middle school. Our middle school science department, almost all of them, the collaboration is award winning. And it only not there is not one teacher that knows everything out there. There's not one coordinator. There's not one no scientist that knows everything. It's when you get together and you get different ideas. And I'm not sure where April got all her ideas, but I can say that she's also part of an incredible biology team at Rockbridge High School. It's amazing. Unfortunately, there are pockets out there that are not yet and in the science department, and we are very much working on that. It starts with hiring great people and also showing all we need to be equal. So it's you're right. We shouldn't have just April's lucky students, which they are, go to camp. What about the students at Hickman? What about the students at Battle? So we're trying to grow our programs. We used her as a great pilot for the last 2 years.
Right.
Now this is very doable, particularly if we're moving some camps local. I think we can do this. But it's collaboration is probably the most important thing that I try to do in the science department because I think that's what has done everything that I have learned and brought to the district. I've learned from somewhere else by going to conferences and collaborating with people. That is how we grow to be the department we are. And people are willing to help each other. You're not working in isolated classrooms. All summer long, as volunteers, we had the middle school science department get together on Sundays for lunches. They went hiking together to plan their camps for the next year. None of our programs that we bring thousands of kids to would be possible because they can't be done in the school day planning.
Right.
And it's the, because of their dedication.
Yeah. I was curious from your perspective.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. No, absolutely. And I agree entirely that that you can't work in isolation and be a successful teacher to your students or to your school. And I think that at Rockbridge we've been really working on because we've got our professional learning team figured out. We work really well together, but we're also now trying to work cross-curricularly. And so we're working with the World Studies department, which all sophomores have to take biology or World Studies. And we're planning all year long to make sure that our reading and our writing, even just when are you teaching how to write a thesis statement? And is our wording aligned? Are we using the same rubrics for writing? Because we don't want kids to come to biology and get something entirely different and then go to World Studies. We want them to see that there's a connection. And even if they're writing the same paper for both of us and they're working with each of the teachers, a biology and a World Studies teacher, on this paper. And that's what to us is really cool because the kids are seeing that we're not isolated either and that they can see the connections between science and all of their other subjects. So a good example of this is last year, and then this was the first year, and so we've had lots of changes, but we did a final project. They did a what-if TED Talk, and so the prompt was, can you ask a question that can change the world? And it had to have a scientific or a historical, societal kind of viewpoint to it. And so we had kids asking all of these amazing great questions, you know, like what if people never died? And so they had to give the scientific, so the implications of that, as well as the societal or the historical implications. And so we, as a team, the World Studies and biology teachers, we got together and we graded all of these together with our common rubric. And they got 2 grades for this one project. And they worked on it all of second semester. And it was just incredible to work with these other amazing teachers that I don't really ever get to see. And so I just think that it's encouraging. And I would encourage other teachers to access beyond their department because they've got great stuff.
And that's in GSS and Common Core.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are, unless you're a strict scientist, and even then, there is no such thing as real life science time and language arts time and math time. It's all clumped together. And it's those kind of opportunities that are more real life.
Yeah.
Are those two meant to be used together, Common Core and EDS? Or
no, Common Core is just math and language arts, right. Although Common Core developers worked with NGSS and vice versa. So they're sure. aligned, but they were two different groups.
Right.
And I was just thinking from an administrator's point of view. So one of the things that I challenged my team to do recently was to tell me how many assessments do we give kids? I mean, this is in ninth grade, you could take up to 24 assessments in a year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thinking from a – I mean, that is the pedagogically the right way to teach is mm-hmm. to show kids how things connect cross-curricularly, but also just from the very nature of just assessing, like we over-assess kids. And so if they were able to take one assessment that is able to demonstrate they've got science knowledge and are able to articulate that from a world history point of view or from an English language arts point of view, it would be so much better for kids, because what I hear from teachers when I walk through is, give me instructional time. I, you know, all we do is assess kids, and that gives me some information, but I can't spend all this time trying to figure out what they know or don't know if I haven't been able to teach them to even figure that out to begin with. So I'm really heartened by how you're describing the work that you're doing.
Well, and it makes sense, because if we're assessing communication, analysis, synthesis, evaluation, those skills are so cross-curricular that we don't have to assess it based on just the content and the knowledge. And that's where I need the world studies teachers to teach me how to teach kids how to research, how to teach them how to write, because that wasn't something that I was ever taught how to actually teach. And so it's been really good to see them. And this year, they're actually coming and doing the lesson with us. So we've got world studies teachers and biology teachers that are going to give the lesson on thesis statements, how to actually set up a paper. And we're doing that all together.
That's great.
We hope, at least. That's our plan. So it just depends
logistically.
But what's
wonderful is that their team tries new things. And they're not always going to be perfect, but they come back and they pick the ones that are great and revise.
Well, another thing that many students are interested in, and the programs do have to work toward a little bit, are the AP classes as well. Maybe talk a little about that, about how those classes have been going, test score-wise, and just if there's been any changes in those in recent
sure.
years.
Sure. We're in science, I can only speak really to science scores.
Sure.
We're
yeah,
very proud. Sure. Yeah. We're very proud of our scores. However, more kids should be able to take the risk of taking AP classes. And what we're finding is not just Columbia, all over the research shows that a lot of kids are scared off of taking AP. It has a connotation of being very hard. It's a lot of work, but many times they can do it. We've had an increase of students taking science AP.
Significant.
Yeah.
I don't know about science, but
yeah.
certainly overall.
And the scores are not going down. You know, at least try. We want them to try it, and we'll help them through that. In science specifically, I still think we need more students to try it out. Biology numbers are pretty high, but the others are not as high as I'd wish them to be.
And it's just they're just afraid of being more difficult
yes.
or maybe not passing the test.
Right, and yeah. they also have to choose between a lot of courses. So you can't take an AP in science. You have to take all the prereqs, and so they only have about a year and a half, 2 years to really take those. So what are they going to fit in, and which ones are they going to choose? Very rarely can you take them all.
And certainly, Ryan, we'd want kids to do well on the AP test at the end of the year, right, get a 3, 4, or 5, and potentially have some college credit to go with it. However, what we've learned is that just taking the class – increases the likelihood that a kid will actually finish college. And if you've taken two classes, then you are 60% more likely to finish college within 4 years. And so we've made a significant push and a real concerted effort to get kids who have been part of underrepresented groups, whether they're Black, Latino, have been an ELL student, you know, second language learner, or a free and reduced lunch kid who has traditionally not considered themselves college-bound, perhaps, or you know, what's interesting is that 91% of the kids we ask, you know, ninth through 12th grade, do you want to go to college? I want to go to college. So so we know that kids want to go. And then our rate of course enrollment has been so low. But from last year to this year, we had about 1,000 more kids. And as to Mike's point, we still had more than 80% of the kids getting a 3, 4, or 5 on the AP. And that is a testament to the hard work of our high school teachers being willing to say, you know what, I know I make a difference in a kid's life. That and you know, what's interesting is the number one influence on achievement is whether a kid actually believes that he or she can. But that is only contributed by the fact that a teacher saying, I know you can, I want you here.
Absolutely. We have to sit down with every single kid and go over their next year's schedule. And they will they'll say, what should I take next year? They don't have a clue. And so it's really, I think it's important for the teachers to encourage kids. Some kids maybe just they shouldn't. That's not the path that they're heading towards. But if you know that a kid, if they just work a little harder and get a little extra help, then I think you should encourage them to do it.
Where would that, if I'm a parent of a student who I'm thinking whether doing this, what would you recommend? Having them talk to their current science teacher, their counselor, somebody else like that?
Yeah, I think the current science teacher is probably the best option. And they usually are the best assessor of kind of which classes they should take for the following year.
We just have to also be thoughtful about what we say to a kid. So if we say it's going to be a hard class, a kid. First of all, when I was in high school, my mother would have been – I'm from Long Island, so you can hear my mother. My mother would have been standing right next to me going, he's taking AP, right? Well, we have so many kids when one in every two kids, almost every one in every two, participates in free lunch. You don't always have a mom or a dad sitting next to that kid saying, I want him to take that class. So it really does become the teacher who is the teacher, the social worker, the counselor. You know, the teacher is now everybody. And so we have to be really thoughtful about when we say this is going to be a hard course, and I think you can do it. If we believe the child can do it, right? We just have to be really thoughtful about the words we use.
Sure, absolutely. I want to take a moment to remind our audience this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femiolner, and today we're talking about science education in Columbia Public Schools. Joining us in studio today for the conversation, Dr. Peter Stiegelman is the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools. Mike Sadowski is the science coordinator for the school system, and April Soulsy is a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. For you and our audience, what questions do you have about science education in Columbia? Ask them by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So a few weeks ago, we actually did a show here on Intersection about women in technology fields. And with you, all of you working, you know, obviously educating people in science, and that whole conversation was about STEM, engineering, all those kinds of classes. I wonder what your thoughts are on that phenomenon, the kind of enrollment and interest level you're seeing in your female students. I don't know, Mike, start with you.
Sure. We have two pieces of evidence that shows, at least in Columbia, we're very happy that we do not see a problem with females being interested in science. If we look at two of our programs, our Grand Teton trips, if you take their last three-year average, we're actually about 51% female. So at the very least, we're equal. And if you look at our AP classes, our AP classes are also actually just slightly, probably insignificant, at least even on males and females. So at least on those that are interested in science, there it is male and female almost exactly mixed, and they're just equally successful.
Interesting. I don't know. April, your thoughts on that too, maybe the high school level?
No, I mean, I don't walk into my classroom and think that we've got a disparity between boys and girls, but also every single sophomore has to take our classes. But even just working with the kids in the AP courses, I'd say that it is about equal in terms of the gender. So I don't.
So it's not necessarily something we put a whole lot of thought into addressing. I mean, again, it kind of came into the public view in the last few months with some of the research that's been put out on the people in those professions.
Right. But sure. Yeah, we're happy to say, at least in the K-12 Columbia system, they're just as interested as boys.
Yeah. One of the things I would be interested in looking at, and I think we could bring that to you the next time you have us on, right? the teaser to have us back, would be to ask the Columbia Area Career Center. When we look at the application of science and technology, the percentage of students who are female who are taking those courses. Because I don't see it as in terms of the core coursework, whether or not we're seeing a dip in who's enrolling, but rather who might see it as a potential career placement, whether or not we're seeing any real discrepancies.
Right. Sure, sure. Another thing, we talked about it a little bit throughout the show, but how are parents doing with science education? Are they, you know, embracing it and helping to foster some growth for students, or is that something that you think parents can maybe do some things better to help some of the absorption, if you will?
I'd say overall in Columbia it's quite positive. And I think that goes back to the university town. And I go back to that elementary science sleuth, their expo we have on the university campus. It's the parents that would have to drive them there, their elementary kids. And yet 2,800 family members came out. Same thing with the Grand Teton trips. They have to raise that money. And we know it's not the kids doing it hardly. So it's the parents. I'd say the only thing we sometimes hear in high school is, my parents hated chemistry or something like that, and so we just have to show them that it's a different chemistry now. It's about real life chemistry, and just
memorizing the periodic table.
We do not memorize the periodic table. There's stuff for that, you know. it really is a different kind of science than what the parents learned. I was a chemistry teacher, and I think back to what I taught using the old state science standards, and I was teaching kids how to do empirical molecular formulas, and, you know, if I were to go ask them back in 2 months later to do that for me, they wouldn't be able to because there's no practical use for it. Now we're looking at things that are actually applicable to life. So it really is it's a different generation for us.
Yeah, our challenge – well, do you have any comments about –
No, go ahead.
No, I was just – for us, our struggle more is about math than science in terms of our how do we communicate with families that, of course, we value efficiency in answering questions, right? You know, the way that we learned subtraction would be, you know, putting that bigger number above the smaller number and just regrouping and subtracting is done. And when you look at a Common Core type question, which sometimes depending on the materials that are being published, we're asking kids to have number sense, to really be able to explain and articulate what they know about these numbers and what those numbers mean. And sometimes that looks like we're asking kids to do a lot more work than what could have been done really quickly. And that's because we want them to have a clear understanding of numbers.
I thought of one example.
Mike, yeah, sure.
About just wonderful community support. It goes back to our Teton trip again, but we have a group of parents this Sunday that are throwing a big thank you dinner party for the 45 chaperones and all their families just for us bringing this to the community. So I've never seen that before. And so we're going to have, I think, 68, 70 people there. And it's just an wonderful gesture from them.
Do we have one more second? Because I'm wondering, would you mind telling about how are you still bringing people on the river? Because there's a whole group out there that is all about river relief.
Yes.
And you and I have sort of caught the Missouri River bug. You
know? We did. We've never been. The Missouri River Relief Group, they want to get more kids out on the river. And it is amazing. I'm one of them. That we have these rivers that go right through the state, and yet I've never been on them. I've never been on the bank of them until we were on a little boat ride together. And the amount of education that takes place there, and the amount that I learned in one day about the river, and it's supposed to be muddy, and it shouldn't not be muddy, you know, all kinds of things, and all the industry and the finance that goes with it. And we are trying to work now to not only with nature school kids, but also bring high school kids, and some of our Douglas High School kids have already been there, to get on the Missouri River and learn the engineering that takes place. And it is a lot of engineering to keep that river open during different types of weather. So I know you and I learned a lot there.
And then all of a sudden you see, I mean, they're bald eagles here.
Yes.
Every part of it was pretty eye-opening. Was. So.
We've talked about a lot of them, but what are some of the other extracurricular opportunities that parents might want to know about to see if their kids might be interested? We've gone over a lot of them.
You could talk about the Audubon.
We could talk
about the planetarium.
Sure. The planetarium is a gem. Most districts do not have a planetarium at Rockbridge High School, and so one Saturday a month we have free shows. November 8th we'll have an open house during our expo event. And the attendance there has been incredible. We have a new digital star system, and every student is able on any grade level to see a different show. So all year long, we are busing kids every single day of the year to the planetarium in elementary and middle school. Another one of our programs is the Audubon Society, and one of our partner friends is the Columbia Audubon Society. And on October 8, 9, 10, I believe this year, every year we bring second graders out to the Nature Center for the Audubon owns. That's an incredible experience. They catch and capture live birds with these invisible mist nets, and they help them band them, something I've never done before until this. They see live raptors, and they're just going all around. And that's for every second grader that wants it. Matter of fact, the sign-ups just went out a couple days ago, and they're almost full already. What are some ones I'm missing?
I mean, at the high school level, just clubs that are after school that the teachers are sponsored, or they're teacher-sponsored and school-sponsored, but outdoor club, and they go camping, and they go splunking. I don't even know if that's the right term for caving. And, you know, they have all of these different events that they do. There is the astronomy club. There is Future Doctors of America. There's just a number of kind of science-y clubs that kids get really involved in.
Yeah, there's a middle school, eighth grade has Saturday morning science, about four, usually in the winter and fall, I believe, where they come and do Saturday science. Columbian Water Light is really big for our middle schools. I mean, we are so rich in the opportunities the community gives us. Mizzou's an incredible partner, the things that we've done here. We worked with the physics department last year, and they got to go to the theaters and see a movie on space and come back and do all kinds of go on the roof of the physics building and look at the sun. It was incredible opportunities in Columbia.
Right. We kind of moved away from this, but I'd like to go back to the next generation science standards. We've kind of brought that up periodically, but I mentioned earlier, you know, Missouri has not embraced it as a state yet, while about half the states have in the country. Mm-hmm. Are there many other districts that are also embracing this in Missouri, groups we're able to work with as we are still kind of figuring out how we implement this here?
We, to my knowledge, we were the first to adopt. However, I actually went around the state this summer and did workshops on the next generation science standards, and I did that last summer. Last summer, everybody was like, I don't know. This summer, it was incredible how they would come to me and say, our district's central office said, let's go for it because it's better for the students. And that was really exciting to see. And I do think they're better for the students. One thing I do want to say, though, is it's about the teacher. You have a teacher like April or a teacher that are engaging. I could bring back the old standards that I don't think are that productive, but a great teacher is going to have a great class, and the kids are going to do wonderful. I could bring NGSS standards here, and if a teacher's not very effective and not engaging, those aren't going to improve anything. Mm-hmm. So it really is about having wonderful teachers in the classroom. that's what makes a science classroom, and that's what gets kids engaged.
Just for those that aren't aware, what were the old standards that some other districts are still using that we
it's the great GLEs or the grade level expectations or the CLEs, course level expectations. And those were adopted by the state. Forgive me, I don't know the date, but they've been around for quite a while. And they were good, solid content standards. However, there's just a lot of them. And then you go by, do the students really, and this is what NGSS does. It evaluates, do the kids really need to know this right now? One of the things I do at the workshops for teachers is I put a bunch of symbols up and I say, what's the electron configuration for silicon? And the answer is, who cares? because is there a time to care? There is. There's a time, upper AP chemistry, we need to care. If you're a chemist, you need to care. But does every south or does every junior or does every middle school kid need to know the electron configuration for silicon? No. When we're skipping all the other things, what about environmental chemistry, food chemistry, all the things that they would use? We didn't have time for that in the past, and that's what NGSS has brought back for us.
And I guess April, too, since you've been a part of implementing this on the ground level, too, what's been some of your first impressions, too?
And we didn't take Mike's suggestion and do it slowly. We said if we're gonna do this, we're just going to do it all in 1 year. And so we spent all of last summer and kind of the previous year knowing that we were getting these standards. And last year, we implemented all of them for the first time, and we did it throughout the entire year. And we know we have lots to work on and lots to change, but in terms of the standards themselves, it was a lot of work to just turn that into curriculum, but it was so worth it. It is very little kind of factual knowledge-based. It's most of its application in just big picture, which is what our sophomores need at this point. Later on, they can get into the details. So we've really loved it. All of our teachers have embraced it, and we like it allows for this cross-collaboration with the focus being on reading and writing and analysis and synthesis and the communication piece.
And I'm really glad she said that. Central office in Columbia or me did not come and say, you're going to do NGSS.
No.
It was the teachers, us learning about it, and me presenting it to them, seeing what they thought, and them developing. They went to the district and asked for NGSS. They believe in it, and that's really big in successful teaching.
Well, that's actually about all the time that we have for today's intersection. We're going to go ahead and end it there. Thanks very much to our guest, Dr. Peter Stiepelman, the superintendent of Columbia Public Schools, Mike Sadowski, the science coordinator for Columbia Public Schools, and April Soolsey, a biology teacher at Rockbridge High School. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast, the intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersections are broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersections produced by Maureen Lewis-Stump and Austin Federa. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Daniel Shapiro. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. And I'm Ryan Famuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.